morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on year. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
I will start our meeting with a serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not engage in any controversy, and neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This morning we'll be hearing from two speakers, Andrew and Wilma, from within the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community of Alcoholics Anonymous. The gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community meets at the Aquarius meeting every Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. and you can find them upstairs in the supper room of the Lees Institute Library at 20 St Mary's Bay Road here in Auckland. The Aquarius group is the only gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender group of Alcoholics Anonymous in New Zealand. So thanks, guys, for coming in this morning and sharing your experience, strength and hope of your journey of recovery from alcoholism. So to start the sharing, Andrew, do you want to share?
Thanks, Steve. I'm Andrew. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Andrew.
I'm very grateful to be here this morning and to share my experience, strength and hope about recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is the 1st July 2001, and that wasn't my only sobriety date, but that's the one that I've been sober since. So experience, strength and hope for me. My experience is that I got into some pretty dodgy situations and, especially, in the latter years of my drinking, I did things that I always swore that I would never do, and I went to places that I swore that I would never go to. And I think that's part of the progression, is that, for me anyway, that, I can promise myself to do or stop at a certain point, and of course that doesn't happen. So for example, at the end of my drinking, I was living in London, and I'd quite often come away from the clubs and bars and in semi-blackout, and there was an occasion when I left the big GAY club in London in the early hours of the morning, and I was certainly not very well. In fact, I was kind of throwing up on myself as I was walking along. And in my mind, I thought, if I keep walking and don't stop, no one will know that I'm throwing up. which is crazy thinking, My drinking is crazy thinking. I was kind of a bit lost. I only live around the corner, but I was still lost. And somebody said next to me, are you all right? And I said, oh, I'm a bit lost. And he asked me where I lived. And I told him, and he said, oh, it's only around the corner. I'll take you there. And I thought, that's kind of nice. And as he was sort of holding me and walking me along, I looked at him and realized he was a homeless person. And I immediately put my hand on my wallet. And, here I am being helped by this man and already judging somebody, and yet I'm not in a state really to be a judge of anybody. And he said to me, oh, don't worry, I'm not going to, rob you. And I just felt so bad. He was doing a kind thing, and I was thinking that, he was doing it for an ulterior motive. So anyway, he got me to my front door. And then the other part of my addiction kicked in when I looked at him and thought, he kind of looks cute. Maybe I should ask him up. And then I have to say that something, in those days of something clicked in always, and it always, some sort of reason came in right at the last minute, and I thought, well, that's probably not a good idea. As much as he's doing a nice thing, it's probably not sensible to invite a homeless person into your house. But, you know, if you're listening and thinking, that man sounds absolutely crazy, I was crazy. I was completely crazy. You know, I had no skill when I was drinking to make, you know, good decisions. And, you know, this is part of the first step of unmanageability. You know, I admitted I'm powerless, but I'm also, my life is unmanageable. And that's really, that came home to me very strongly on occasions like that. So I started to go to AA. I didn't get it straight away, but when I was ready to get it, I managed to stick around and keep coming back. So I guess my my story is that, you know, I drank a lot, and drugs were involved as well, but, you know, mostly alcohol. And it just bore me to my knees, basically. I got originally, I got sober in Christchurch and went to a rehab. And, you know, I kind of didn't really get it. I certainly didn't think that I needed to stop drinking forever. I knew that I had a problem with using, but I wasn't really thinking that it was something I had to do a day at a time for the rest of my life. And I guess for that reason, not being ready meant I didn't, you know, I didn't take certain steps. I didn't hand over. I didn't let go. And, you know, I wanted to feel better, but I didn't really want to do all the work. And so consequently, I went back out there. And then I did a big geographical and moved to London. And I spent another couple of years, you know, doing the party circuits and things. It was a bit like a kid in a candy store, London, to be honest. Soho, the gay clubs and bars, and, you know, it was like I had all my addictions in one place. And it was, you know, it was a pretty amazing time in terms of, you know, it really did bring me to my knees. And I am grateful for that. You know, it was a horrible place to be, and but, you know, I kind of knew what I had to do. In the background, there was always AA, you know. And when I was ready, I went to my first meeting, as I say, on the 1st of July, 2001, and I haven't had a drink or a drug since. And it is an amazing feeling when you know the game is up inside yourself, you know, to really go to any lengths to stay sober, you know. And I got a sponsor very quickly, and he was very strong in the steps and took me through the steps. And, you know, I was kind of, there was no ifs or buts or, you know, conditions with my recovery anymore. There was just simply a suggestion from another sober member who had the time up and who had done the steps. And, you know, and he only asked me to do things that he had done himself, and I found that extremely honest and comforting, really, that, you know, I wasn't joining some cult, I wasn't being tricked into, you know, religion or anything in particular, that other than just, you know, staying sober and having a sober life. So he took me through the steps, and he said to me that, you know, every time you do a step, you will feel better. And that's exactly my experience. You know, I did each step, and sometimes I wondered what on earth he was telling me to do or suggesting that I did. And yet every single time I felt this huge relief and, you know, growth, if you like. And, you know, when I first came in, I thought really my world was over and that the rest of my life would be boring. And, you know, especially being a gay man and loving the clubs and the party scene, and, you know, but really, it takes some time, of course. It probably does feel like it's over for a while, but the thing is, it changes, you know, and there's this lovely, rewarding kind of breathing a new life, really. And the other things that used to matter don't matter anymore, you know. And I still have a lot of fun, and I've made a lot of new friends in recovery and outside of recovery, but made them in a different way. You know, relationships were formed based around, you know, liking someone and being attracted to someone because of their attributes and their personality, not just about the fact that they had, you know, enough alcohol or the right party place or whatever. And that those are things that you don't think about when you come into AA. You know, I just thought everything was over. And so, you know, that hasn't been the truth for me. And, you know, the other thing is that in terms of the hope of recovery, you know, I really felt like I was kind of middle-aged and didn't have anything. And in fact, in recovery, I probably lost more things in terms of possessions and financial status, if you like. Of course, all that has come back and more in a relatively short period of time. You know, I mean, 12 years seems a long time, but I think when you're on the road to recovery, that's quite a quick time. And there's so much change and so much excitement. And you know, my opinion about what I lost, before the end of my drinking, now those things are not important. So it's like I didn't really lose them because I've got a new understanding about life on life's terms and, you know, what the value of life really is, you know. And it's not about having the flash car and the big house and the, you know, the right boyfriend and all of that sort of thing. I mean, those are important in terms of a natural progression into, a bridge to normal living. You know, I don't deny myself those things today, but I don't go into them, you know, putting them all on the credit card or a huge mortgage. You know, they're sensibly put in place for what I can manage. And, you know, these are things that I just had no idea that I would learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought it was all about how not to pick up a drink a day at a time. And for me, it has to be much more than that. You know, it says in the book, you know, happy, joyous and free. And we absolutely insist on having a good time. And that's what it's about. You know, it's about having a good time. And I just really love life without alcohol and drugs. And, you know, I have much more honest relationships today. I can turn up for things for people. It doesn't always have to be about Andrew. I'm not perfect. I mean, some days it is about Andrew, but, you know, it's just nice to turn up and be part of the human race, you know. And in terms of I like to say gay AA, you know, it's if you're out there and you're wanting to find your little group, you know, it's certainly a great place to be because, you know, you're with your tribe, you know, you're with your group. For many years, I thought the reason I felt so different and out of sorts and the drinking and the drugging, I really put down to the fact that I'm entitled to because I'm a gay man. You know, I'm not accepted here in New Zealand. I wasn't then. And I felt that it was okay to join those people and party and that was, you know, I didn't have any responsibility. But today, you know, 12 years ago when I really admitted that I was an alcoholic, I was kind of able to breathe out for the first time and really realise that that's what it was all about. You know, it wasn't about being a gay man. It wasn't about being, you know, illegal or legal or accepted or have rights or whatever. It was about Andrew's an alcoholic. And that's why my thinking is screwed up. And that's why I feel or can feel irritable and discontent and not fit in. But in recovery, of course, it's wonderful to fit in. You know, it's wonderful to be part of the Aquarius group and turn up every Tuesday, or most Tuesdays, and, you know, and just listen to other folk in our community. But, you know, there are loads of meetings in Auckland every week and you know, it's not about just doing that. You know, it's about getting a really nice mix of ideas and input and sharing, and it's, you know, it's something I intend to do a day at a time, you know, for the rest of my life, because it's what I want to do. It's not because I feel I have to or need to. Some people say that, but I actually want to. You know, I think it's a great way of life. So, yeah, I'm really grateful to be here, and thank you for asking me to share.
Thanks, Andrew. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air on 104.6 Planet FM. And Wilma, do you want to share?
Sure, thanks. Yeah, my name's Wilmer. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Wilmer.
Yeah, my sobriety date's the 11th of March 2005. I haven't had the need to take any mind or mood-altering substances, including alcohol, since that date. But like Andrew, I didn't start out then. I started out way back in 1990. So it took me 15 years to get sober. Yeah, you know, brain the size of a universe, and it took me that long to get a clue that alcohol and me didn't mix. But, you know, I had a whole lot of reasons why that wasn't the case, because I didn't get the disease concept. I didn't get the idea that adding alcohol to my system turns me into somebody I didn't want to be. You know, the evidence was blatantly obvious to everyone around me, but I didn't see it. You know, well, I didn't, you know. Because for me, I've found that when I'm enjoying my drinking, I'm not controlling it. When I'm controlling my drinking, I'm not enjoying it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was fine when I was drunk. I had no problem with being drunk, but people around me had a huge problem with it. The problem for me was the time in between drinks, you know, where I was resentful, angry, discontent, you know. And I managed to hold down good jobs and all the rest of it. But, yeah, as I said, I came in 1990 and I didn't understand that the disease concept of me being a sick person trying to get well, I was a bad person trying to get good. You know, I sort of think that when I first came to the Aquarius AA meeting, which was the only AA meeting I was really doing, was that if only I was good enough, I'd qualify to wear a pink dress. You know, now I'm sort of a bit on the butch side lesbian. Why the hell would I want to wear a pink dress? But, you know, I had this Sunday school myth in my head that of what a good person does, and I knew damn well I wasn't a good person. No concept at all that I was a sick person. No concept at all that I had the phenomenon of craving whenever alcohol was introduced to my body, that if I had one drink, I wanted more. And the allergy, that adding that alcohol to my body, as I said, reacted differently to me than it did to people who are non-alcoholic. And, you know, like, I know some really heavy drinkers. I've always known some really heavy drinkers. But most of them have never crossed that line into alcoholism. And the thing that I've noticed is how I tell now who's got a problem with alcohol and who hasn't, you know. When you're at a bar and somebody has that first drink, be they take a sip, be they take a gulp, a regular drinker just takes a sip or takes a gulp. The alcoholic takes a sip, takes a gulp and goes, It's that sense of relief that comes from having that first drink. You know, and I well know what that's like. The only way I could get any ease and comfort was to add alcohol. But there's this problem with alcohol in that you've got to pay for it, which rather means you have to work, which is kind of hard to do if you're always hungover. And so I took off to Sydney. And, you know, I found there was all of these substances over there you could take, which means you could drink all night, go to work all day, get home from work, have the nana nap and go out and do it all over again. You know, and I lived my life like that for years. Oh, God, you know, like, you know, I don't actually know what I did to my metabolism, but I'm sure it wasn't good. And it was like I was always very busy. Even sitting still, I was very busy. And that adding the chemicals to my brain causes me to speed up no end. You know, there wasn't a moment where I had any peace of mind. And so I'd seek to numb my brain through alcohol and other substances just to get that sense of ease and comfort, that sense of relief. And at the end of the day, you know, I knew there was a few people that were a bit sort of wary of me or, you know, like didn't know what I'd do next. The thing I didn't know was that how scared I'd become of myself. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do next. I could go out, I could have one or two drinks and all would be well. And I could probably do that for weeks on end. And then one night I'd go out and, God, you know, I just wouldn't be able to stop drinking, you know. Mm. Days, weeks, even months could go by and that party was still going on. And, yeah, you know, I as I said, I thought I was a bad person. I thought I had issues. You know, if you had had my childhood, I mean, I came out at 15, for God's sake, you know. Like, and as Andrew was saying, it was a very different world back in 1975. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, there's people I know the same age as me at the time who came out, and they're not alcoholic. I am different as an alcoholic only in the way that alcohol affects my system. And every other part of my life, you know, nowadays I can be really functioning. The only thing is, don't add alcohol. So, yeah, as I said, I came in here in 1990 and I wasn't really an alcoholic. You know, I could see how everyone else in the room was pretty sick and needed help, but somehow it didn't apply to me. Like I said, I had issues. Bit of therapy would sort that out, could change my behaviour. Yeah, you know, the reality, the bottom line was all of that was a complete lie because I just didn't want to stop drinking. You know, because I know if there's something in my way, there's always a way to get around it. And if only I, you know, if only I could basically got over all of those people that had hurt me, you know, all of those people that had damaged me, scarred me emotionally, then my life would be fine. Funny thing was, it wasn't. You know, the whole thing, like I went off to treatment and a treatment centre and... You know, most people, you know, not everyone that comes into AA needs to do a treatment centre, but I needed time out from my life. But what I learned in treatment was ways to get out of actually stopping drinking. You know, I went to other fellowships. I avoided AA like the plague, and I think I did that because I knew it worked. And as I said, the bottom line was I didn't want to stop drinking. You know, the world around me was crazy. You know, like I said, I didn't know what was going to happen next, and worst, I didn't know what I was going to do next. I didn't like the idea of complete abstinence. You know, I thought there was a way that I could beat the game, you know. But if you're an alcoholic of my type, going out and only having two drinks and no more gets incredibly boring. And, you see, I needed alcohol to function. I'd go to the opening of an envelope if there was free alcohol, you know. And there's a lot of envelope openings around the gay scene in Auckland, you know. Put your name down on a few of the art gallery lists. And free alcohol. You know, I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know that I couldn't function in a social situation without alcohol. And now I've actually come to find that by not drinking, I function heaps better in a social situation. I have way more fun. And I look around and people don't drink like I drink. I mean, there's a few of them, but I give them the swerve, and they probably give me the swerve too because they don't like me being sober. But, you know, I don't know. But I do know there's a thing that one thing I heard when I came in was alcoholism. The ISM stands for I Seek Misery. And alcohol being a depressant, the more alcohol I added to my system, the more misery I felt, you know. I could do that hiding under the duvet for days on end, you know. A whole weekend just hiding under the duvet, sort of crawling out to maybe have a beer or something to make me feel a little bit better, because if your life was as bad as mine, you know, there was anything that was, you know, like looking at a sunset. I mean, why would you do that? You know, unless you've got a bottle of sangria in your Cafe Del Mar in Ibiza or something, then there's a purpose in watching a sunset. But, you know, like I'm looking out the window now and there's oak trees sort of just getting their new leaves, you know, and it's like it looks really amazing against the sky. But I would never have noticed that. You know, this whole world of colour just sort of sprung up very quickly after I stopped drinking. And I'd never noticed it. I knew it was there, but I hadn't actually sort of taken it in. And that trudge, you know, it was like every day was just a repeat. It was, you know, Groundhog Day. You know, I was totally dependent on people around me to make me feel good about me. And I've heard that, you know, if you come into AA and you've got high self-esteem, you're probably in the wrong place. You know. People don't, you don't drink like an alcoholic drinks and feel good about yourself. You know, you don't look in the mirror, well, you know, I used to avoid the mirror like the plague, you know, and, it was just hideous. It was just no way to be, and the paranoia that sneaks in with excessive substance abuse, you know, like, you don't know who to trust, always looking over your shoulder. Yeah, like I didn't owe anyone anything. I didn't actually have anyone to be scared of except myself. But yet I was still walking around scared and probably quite aggro too. Like as I said, going out sober is... It's this whole new world, eh? It's like coming out all over again. And as Andrew was saying, you know, I only used to go out to follow my addictions, and now I actually enjoy seeing people. You know, I like meeting up with people. I like doing things with friends. Whereas before, I wouldn't... You know, somebody said to me, oh, let's go for a nice walk along Bethel's, you know? I think, oh, you know, where do we get booze from out there? You know, do we carry it? It'll be heavy. You know, just the thought of just little things like that. It just wasn't in my field of vision. You know, everything had to be a party, and everything had to be a bigger party than the time before. And that in itself's pretty bloody tedious. Yeah, and the 12 steps give me a way out for myself. I mean, the first step that says I'm powerless over alcohol, my life had become unmanageable. Well, my life had become unbearable. But it was definitely unmanageable. But all the way through, I'd had trouble with this powerlessness thing, because we're all taught about how to, you know, like part of any good group therapy is empowerment. And, you know, if only you get all your ducks in a row, everything will be all right. And while I was doing that, I was still living in the vain hope that one day I would control and enjoy my drinking. And it wasn't until I gave up and just, yeah, look, it doesn't matter what I do, what I learn, what issue I work on, add alcohol to me and something happens I don't like. And so it wasn't until I put my hands up and was like, I can't do it anymore, that I actually started to get a clue about what this program was about. And yeah, time takes time. You know, I'd love to, you know, I've been to treatment centres, you know, where you come out and you've got a certificate that says she has completed the 12 steps. Well and good. But it's actually about getting them into my life. So it's more about the more I live life, the more I bring these steps into them. And if you, when you come to an AA meeting, you'll see God on the walls. I mean, that was a terrifying thing to me. You know, God hates fags. We all know that one. Westboro Baptist Church. Oh yay! But I've come to believe that you know, there's a whole universe out there, and I'm either in the flow of life, or I'm fighting against it. And that's what AA's given me. You know, I'm now back into the stream of life. It's by the grace of God, and I'm glad I don't have to live like I once lived. So thanks for asking me to share.
Thanks, Wilma.
Thanks, Wilma.
This brings us towards the end of our meeting. Our speakers this morning have been from within the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community meets every Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. in the Lees Institute Library, and you can find them upstairs in the supper room at number 20 St Mary's Bay Road in Ponsonby, right here in Auckland. So thanks, guys, for coming in and sharing your experience, strength and hope. If you have a problem with alcohol and you want help, you can phone 0800 AA Works, which will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. There are over 100 AA meetings each week within the Greater Auckland area. And for more information, log on to aa.org.nz. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back here again next Sunday, 10:45 a.m. on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
You can hear this program again at planetaudio.org.nz/AA meeting on air.
One of those